Hello there, this is Dean Corn from the UK again. This is for Sharon. Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday, dear Sharon. Happy birthday to you. Cheerio.
Change has come for America.
Alien race to come down and threaten us.
The military industrial complex.
A highly funded yet unofficial government agency.
I've now been in 57 states.
As paint fumes swirl on the bunker, this is PID Radio. I'm Derek Gilbert.
And I'm Goofy Gilbert. Welcome to the bunker. The paint fumes are making me swoon.
Not just the paint fumes, but the polyurethane on top of the paint fumes. So
it's just
we sound
so
a little
much.
Yeah, a little raspy, a little foggy today. It's because we've been doing a lot of remodeling work here in the home over the last 3 days.
Derek finally broke down and got some over-the-counter medicine.
Yeah.
For which he had to sign away his life, give verification of himself. Probably they took a DNA swab. I may have missed seeing that. They asked for his ID twice.
Right.
Are you sure you're over 18?
They had two different addresses, both of which were wrong. But it's scary that they had them on file to begin with. This was at a Mega Mart store nearby. And I just went to get some over-the-counter antihistamine decongestant. The kind that you can't buy anymore because drug dealers are turning them into meth. And
I don't know how they had the Missouri address in there. That makes no sense.
Well, you go to one of those stores and they track you across the country. I wouldn't be surprised to find out if the pharmaceutical records at major chains don't wind up in an NSA database someplace. So anyway.
And they will. In fact, they will. And they are.
No doubt. And, of course, the irony is that most of the meth coming into the United States is coming in via Mexico anyway, not from, guys working out of the back of a car here.
Right.
In the heartland. Well, welcome to PID Radio. We're recording this on Monday, November the 2nd of 2009, as we were a little bit shagged out from the
redecorating. We've had a long weekend.
Yeah, but a good one. But a good one.
It's been a wonderful weekend. I love doing projects with you. And if you've been to our Facebook site, I know I've got mine. The pictures are up, and I think you've put a couple of them up.
The
way the new room looks, we always referred to it as the brown bedroom because the walls were a deep chocolate brown. Actually, I love brown. It's just that the woodwork here is brown.
Mahogany.
So
Yeah,
so it really wasn't working. It wasn't making the woodwork pop.
No.
You got to make it pop.
Yes, if we've learned any one word that is key from the designers on, those do-it-yourself shows, it's pop.
Pop and zen.
Yeah, pop
now,
and zen.
The room is not zen.
No, we don't go there.
No, we don't.
Or feng shui.
No, we don't go there either.
Nuh-uh.
But that woodwork pops.
Yeah, yeah.
But the room is really, really pleasant. We painted the floor white, so you can see the pictures in there. We've had a great time tearing things up and putting them back together.
Yes. And
trying to take care of this wonderful, wonderful house.
Right. It is truly a blessing. And as we mentioned before, we are under contract to buy from a wonderful couple that has been very gracious to us. And they themselves are in the ministry, so this is a blessing to them as well.
Mm-hmm.
So while we're here, we're at the very least covering the expense that they're putting out to keep this house in their name. So we're very thankful that we've been able to do that. And one way or the other, regardless of when the Lord calls us to the next stop in our journey, we hope to leave this in much better shape, in better condition anyway, than we found it. So, and it was in wonderful condition to start. So,
See him snoring next to me.
A lot of things going on.
And, of course, on Saturday we had, we had to take Sam out in his Sam O'Lantern costume.
Right,
so he could scare the neighborhood kids. And of
cats.
Course, they were terrified, yes.
Yeah, and the neighborhood cats flew. Yeah,
they were terrified.
Yeah.
Speaking of Halloween, we just learned today that we think on Halloween night, sometime between this afternoon and the last time I drove the car, but we think it was on Halloween night, someone broke into our garage.
Yeah, we have an old barn door style. Door on the sliding door on the back of the garage. It's old. That door probably dates back to the original garage from 1910 or whatever, when it was a carriage house.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, we had it secured with a relatively inexpensive padlock.
Mm-hmm.
And somebody busted the padlock off and went in. The funny thing is that nothing was stolen. Nothing was damaged. They didn't do anything to the vehicle that we had parked in there. But they did go inside the vehicle and pulled out a black nylon case that looked like it might hold something expensive, like a portable stereo system. Now, neither one of us has...
No, it's a roadside kit.
Yeah, exactly. You know, it's got a screwdriver, yeah. Flashlight, a flare, you know, some of that run-flat stuff that you can put into a tire. And once they open it, because they left it on the roof of the car.
I know.
So they looked inside, discovered there wasn't anything in there they could sell, and you know, left it and closed the door behind them and went on their way.
I'm grateful that they didn't take anything, that they didn't hurt anything. The most we're out is a padlock, but, you know, it's kind of funny. You and I don't have anything worth taking.
Exactly. Exactly.
They didn't even take your... They didn't take your... Barbershop Quartet CD. I would have thought that on the black market, that would be worth a fortune.
Well, I had that cleverly hidden there in the center compartment in the dashboard there. Well, anyway, so we're thankful for that. You know, of all the things that could have happened, I mean, that is certainly one of the, you know, most tolerable.
It's a pretty minor thing, yeah, in the scheme of things. And then, of course, today is Monday. Yesterday, Sunday afternoon, we had the pleasure of being on a radio show from right here in Indiana.
Yeah, up in Kendallville, Indiana, Colonel Terry Thacker and Reverend Al Wingfield had us on a program called Wellness and You. It's Kendallville's a little town north of Fort Wayne. And Al does a program on wellness, but I guess from a gospel perspective, a scriptural perspective. And so he's also interviewed Mike Bennett, a.k.a. Dr. Future, on his program. So we were honored to be guests following in Dr. Future's footsteps on that show. And we call him Colonel Terry Thacker because...
He's a Kentucky colonel.
Yes.
Which is quite an honor.
It truly is. He hosts a weekly bluegrass music show on this radio station. It's WAWK, The Hawk. And I believe it's 11:40 a.m. But it's wawk.com, and they stream online. And his program on Sundays is just wonderful bluegrass music from, his part of Kentucky, which is also your family's part of Kentucky.
He's from the same county or just...
He's from
Letcher County?
Letcher County, yeah.
Oh, that is good country.
Right. So, you know, he knows his stuff, and he's been honored by the state of Kentucky for his contributions to as an ambassador for bluegrass music. And he kind of arranged the interview. So, Terry, thank you very much. We truly appreciate it.
We really did have a good time, and we're happy to come back any old time.
That's right.
So, as of last night, after we'd done all that, and also NaNoWriMo began yesterday, National Novel Writing Month. It's NaNoWriMo.org. If you are interested in writing a novel in 30 days. We had started that this weekend, so we were kind of tired last night.
Yeah.
Especially after working on the house, too. So we have held off until today. So we've got stuff to talk about.
Well, let's dive in. The good first thing, of course, is that we're still here.
We're all
still
here.
Predictions to the contrary.
Amen. I mean, many, many prognosticators out there, the web bots, many people who are consider themselves watchmen and watchwomen, have been looking at the news and looking at the various indicators out there in the world. And I think many, many people feared that sometime in October, there would be a world-changing event.
Right.
Well, I am so thankful to the Lord that here we are on November 2nd, and I can honestly say, unless in retrospect we look back and say, oh, that's when it started, there's nothing that I can really name. Yeah, the stock market fell about 230 points on Friday, but it did a minor climb back today. It's, I don't think we're seeing the massive downhill run that we'll eventually hit.
No, it certainly wasn't the equivalent of a Black Monday, Black Tuesday, Black Friday, whatever that we've seen in, you know, financial crises in the past. Mm-hmm. We're certainly not out of the woods. And one of the commentators that are analysts that I respect, Ambrose Evans Pritchard of The Telegraph over in the UK, is warning that we should really be watching Japan right now, not the United States, because Japanese debt is, as a percentage of their gross domestic product, is far higher than it is in the United States. It's like 200% of GDP compared to the U.S., which is only, in air quotes, about 80% of GDP. But point is that the Japanese have been trying to get out of the doldrums for 20 years by using the same methods that the Bush and Obama administrations have been using here in the United States. But again, that's been sort of a slow motion crash that's been taking place. The reason it's coming to a head in Japan, according to Evans Pritchard, is that they're, like in the United States, their population is aging. The workforce is shrinking, and you've got fewer people who can be taxed in order to pay for the people who are retiring with state benefits, their equivalent of Social Security. So that is something to keep an eye on, that at least this, in the opinion of this analyst, Japan may be the trigger that starts the dominoes to fall, not the United States. We'll see. Bottom line is that it doesn't appear that the medicine that we need, which is to bite the bullet, let prices and asset values deflate to a normal level, is going to happen. Government's going to keep trying to pump things up, and that's only going to lead to a prolonged malaise, as they've had in Japan for the last two decades.
Well, was the CIT that just filed for bankruptcy?
Yeah. CIT is the company that provides financing to
Commercial loans, I think.
Commercial lending, right. It's primarily to small and medium-sized businesses.
Mm-hmm. Which is a bad thing, because it's showing that there is a very fragile commercial market. And I think with the economy the way it is, it makes it tougher on small business, makes it tougher. You're making a face.
Oh, I'm just doing a little quick background review here. Why
I should have snapped a picture of that. He was making a face. No, it's been tough on small businesses right now. It's going to get tougher. And if they can't pay their loans, then the people who are guaranteeing the loans, just as with the so-called subprime mortgage market, the subprime commercial market, or the commercial market in general, is just about to fall. And when that hits, we're going to have small businesses going out all over the place, and that's going to take employment with it.
Right. Vox Day, who is a blogger that I've read for quite a long time, was disappointed I wasn't able to set up an interview with him over his last book, The Irrational Atheist.
Doesn't he live in France?
He's either in Italy or Switzerland.
Okay.
Italy,
I
think.
Overseas.
Yeah. And that was the reason, because, I work during the day, and by the time I get home at night, he and, his family are asleep and in bed. But I'd like to see about setting up an interview with him over his new book, which is called The Return of the Great Depression, because he argues that the only economic model that predicted what is happening now is the Austrian School of Economics, which essentially puts a lot more weight on credit, or actually acknowledges the impact of credit on the overall economy, which is not taken into account by Keynesian economic theory, which, of course, is the predominant theory.
For most of the 20th century and now to the 21st.
Anyone who questions Keynesian economics is considered, almost like a birther, or or a truther is another er. So...
Caldies?
Yes. Day makes the case that we are just on the lip of a very great chasm into which we must drop unless government economists and the economists who influence government policy change their way of thinking, which isn't likely to happen. Mm-hmm. Because the only ones making out on this, of course, are the big bankers. It's like there's a quote that's attributed to Meyer Rothschild, the patriarch of the Rothschild banking dynasty, who is claimed that he said the time to buy is when blood is running in the streets. Now, I don't know that he meant literally, although in 18th century Europe that happened a lot.
That could be.
Yeah, but figuratively speaking, that is the time to buy. If you had a lot of cash in the bank and you wanted to build a real estate empire, now is the time to go around and snap up a lot of cheap property.
It's the Hudsucker proxy.
Yeah, yeah.
We're seeing the Hudsucker proxy on an international scale.
That's right. We destroy the value of everything so that the only ones who can afford to buy up stuff are the ones who basically control the supply of money, the bankers. Toss a couple of things out there because, in the grand scheme of things, this really shouldn't be a surprise, but it just gives you an idea of where the hearts and minds of these bankers are. Goldman Sachs, we've not talked about Goldman Sachs, at least not in conspiratorial terms so much. There are some who believe that essentially Goldman Sachs runs everything, and I don't know if I go that far, but certainly they've had more than their share of influence on American financial policy over the last couple of decades. How many Treasury secretaries have been former Goldman Sachs?
Four, five?
Something like that. Rubin, Hank Paulson, and now Geithner, all former, you know, Goldman Sachs guys. There's an investigative report produced by McClatchy Newspapers that has just come out today, I believe, and I'll put a link to this in the show notes at PIDradio.com, that Goldman Sachs, as the real estate market was beginning to implode in 2006, 2007, I mean, it was 2006. We put our house on the market, the one that didn't sell.
Mm-hmm. We were just ahead of the curve.
We were. We were trendsetters once again. Goldman Sachs sold about $40 billion with a B dollars worth of securities that were backed by home mortgages, risky home mortgages that Goldman Sachs knew were risky. But, of course, at that time, there was a real appetite for these securities based on home mortgages. They sold them as AAA-rated bonds, as AAA-rated securities to investors. Insurance companies, labor unions, pension funds, so forth, financial institutions overseas, you know, foreigners were drawn into the scam. But according to the investigation by McClatchy, Goldman Sachs knew that these were risky mortgages that were likely to fail. And, of course, because of this bizarre credit default swap financial instrument, they were able to bet that these bonds would go into default because the mortgages were going to fail. So Goldman Sachs made a bundle when these mortgages went bad, when these bonds that they sold, these securities that they sold went bad.
That's illegal in Major League Baseball.
It is. And you're right. Betting on something that they did to fail, it's like betting against your own team.
Yeah.
But Goldman Sachs did and apparently made a lot of money on this. And I've not had the time to read this entire report, but I will put a link to it in the show notes. But that's the kind of financial shenanigans that companies like Goldman Sachs and other Wall Street investment firms and other firms around the world have been playing lives of Americans and citizens around the world.
And they bet on those same lives.
And they bet on those same lives, which is even more disturbing when you understand that Goldman Sachs and others have been selling securities based on life insurance payouts, okay? They're trading in life insurance settlements. What they'll do is they will offer a payout to someone who has a life insurance policy. Okay, we know that you've got a payout of $1 million on your life insurance. We'll offer you $50,000 for that insurance policy today. Now, of course, you get no insurance payoff when you die. Your family, your dependents get nothing when you die, mm-hmm. but you get the cash now. Now, in today's economy, how attractive would it be if somebody came to you and said, look, we'll offer you a penny on the dollar for that $1 million life insurance policy, or even 10 cents on the dollar for that life insurance policy? I'll bet there are a lot of people who would take it.
You know, I think there are a lot of people who would take that.
Right.
It's like, okay, you've got a nice hot cup of porridge there.
Right.
Yes, I'll sell you my inheritance.
That's
for
right.
That.
That's right. It's the Esau trade. So a company like Goldman Sachs takes over the payments on the life insurance policy on your life, mm-hmm. and then bundles it with a bunch of other life insurance payouts from other people, and then sells shares of those payouts mm-hmm. to investors. In effect, what they're doing is selling financial instruments to investors who are betting that you're going to die.
Now, I sold insurance mm-hmm. years ago, in another life, back in my insurance period. At that time, now things may have changed since then, but at that time, it was illegal for me to take out a life insurance policy on a total stranger.
Right.
Because I did not have what was called an insurable interest in that person.
Right.
In other words, my livelihood in no way depended upon that person being alive or dead.
Now, just to interject for a second, what you've just described is exactly what happens in a credit default swap. Because a bank like J.P. Morgan Chase can take out a credit default swap in a transaction in which they have no financial interest.
Well, that's what I was going to say. That'll be the next thing. If they can legally go in and offer John Doe mm-hmm. $50,000 for this $1 million payout,
right?
and legally get it and have it stand up in a court of law that Mrs. John Doe at John Doe's death maybe goes in and says, where's that $1 million you owe me?
Mm-hmm.
And the company says, no, no, we're giving it to this person that never knew your husband, except he wrote him a check and he blew it.
Nope.
Blew the money. The next step would be for a company to come in and insure John Doe without John knowing it.
Yeah. Now, I don't know if that's possible, but this life insurance payout business has been growing. It really began in about 2001. The life settlements industry in 2001 was about a $2 billion industry. It grew to a $16 billion industry in 2008.
Well, may I raise my hand, sir?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay. Here's the hypothetical. XYZ company comes in and says, I'll give you $50,000, Mr. Gilbert, for that $1 million payout. Not that you have a $1 million payout life insurance policy, but let's say you did.
Okay.
We'll give you $50,000. In fact, we'll give you $100,000 for that $1 million payout, and we'll make the premiums from now on. And
right.
Then suddenly, next week, you die in a car crash. Accidentally.
Yeah. Accidentally.
Yeah.
The life insurance company or the investment bank would suddenly be into $1 million.
Let's face it, when deals like this are taking place, these people are literally hoping you die because they get the payout all that much sooner without having to make payments for a long period of time.
Exactly right. In fact, investors in Germany were complaining. And this is a story that I heard on the radio a few weeks ago, and I thought this has to be a joke because surely this can't be real. But it is. Investors in Germany were beginning to complain that these life settlement investments they were making weren't paying out the returns they were promised because Americans on whom these life insurance policies were drawn were living too long.
Oh, God.
Isn't this bizarre? Isn't this bizarre? Goldman Sachs started buying in 2006. They actually bought a minority stake in a company that specializes in doing nothing but these life settlement transactions. And in December of 2007, they actually launched an index, a longevity index that you can probably track with Yahoo Finance or something on your homepage. It's essentially, it's a death index to help you track longevity investments.
Well, here's your NaNoWriMo novel, Derek. You've got unscrupulous company that goes around buying up these securities that are really just nothing more than hoping that you die. And suddenly we have thousands and tens of thousands of Americans dying of so-called natural causes.
Yeah, it is really bizarre. And Goldman Sachs.
And it even could be after a large vaccine program.
Oh, okay. Yeah, okay. Yeah, sorry. Well, now we got at least a thousand other people who are thinking the same thing.
I know our listeners, and I knew that they were thinking it before I even
you
said
probably
it.
Are right.
I mean, imagine that. And here we have, let's just take another step toward that. We've got the Georgia Guidestones and many people within that realm of thought that say, you know what, we're better off without humans on the earth.
Yeah.
So let's get that population down to about 5% of what it is now.
But let's not waste the opportunity here.
Exactly.
Let's figure out a way we can make some money.
Anyway.
Let's make some money on this deal.
Let's make sure that they're all insured and then buy up those policies.
It is bizarre. And Goldman Sachs isn't the only company involved in this. J.P. Morgan Chase is involved. Credit Suisse, the Swiss bank, has 90 people in London and New York who do nothing but this kind of investment. This is really bizarre, and I was shocked. I thought the story was fake. German investors upset because Americans weren't dying soon enough.
Mr. Gilbert, would you like some magic beans? All you need to do is give me that worthless piece of paper, and I will give you the magic beans.
Oh, you know, and again, this is just another reflection of the spiritual war that's going on out there. It is so bizarre. Love of money, the root of all evil. Boy, if you ever needed proof, this story sure provides it.
I know it. Well, you know, we're going to talk about spiritual deception, and you got to talk about the. It was all over sci-fi over the weekend.
The original series and miniseries, right?
Yeah, we watched it.
Yep.
And not all of it. Got to see most of it, though, yesterday. And then the series that sort of was based on it was playing most of today.
Mm-hmm.
Tuesday, is the reimagined V.
Yeah, 11-3 is...
We are of peace, always.
Reimagined in the same sense, I guess, that Battlestar Galactica was reimagined when they brought it back. It, you know, took it out of that sort of semi-campy, you know, look.
Big hair, big shoulders.
Big hair, big shoulders. All of the sets looked like they could, they would collapse if you really ran into them hard. You know, the kind of thing you'd find
in the Ed Wood version.
Exactly. You know, soundstage type stuff. Whereas Battlestar Galactica really, you know, had some production values. And it looks like V will as well. The reviews of the pilot episode are over the top, you know, 11 out of 10.
Oh, yeah.
So it looks like it's well done. But what is the meme here? Well, you know, this is interesting because it sort of ties together with the discussion I had with Paul and Philip Collins yesterday. Not the interview that aired in air quotes, on the View from the Bunker last night, which was our discussion of Dominionism. But we did another interview over the weekend for 2 weeks from now about what they call the cult of the superweapon, which is this idea that was popularized by H.G. Wells deliberately to create a fear in humanity that the threat of global destruction by some sort of superweapon, and it was H.G. Wells, by the way, who first coined the term atomic bomb, would convince humanity to unite under one world government. Of course, one human government, which is anti-Christian. We know that there will be ultimately a one-world government under an anti-Christ, but that will be
Ronald Reagan himself, and I'm sure that the Collins brothers, if they didn't mention this, I know they know about it, had said a number of times that if a race from space, if aliens showed up in our atmosphere and we all had to fight them, it would be the one thing that we would unite all countries.
Right.
Suddenly we would be one nation.
Exactly. Hence H.G. Wells'
War of the Worlds.
Also other lesser known, at least lesser known to most of us, novels like The World Set Free really dealt with this concept about war being the ultimate result of separate nation states and why we needed to unite as one world in order to prevent global destruction. And then the Collins brothers went on to discuss how that influenced the Manhattan Project and, you know, Oppenheimer, who made the famous statement, "I am become death, destroyer of worlds." And Edward Teller, who was part of this. And Teller and Oppenheimer apparently represented opposing viewpoints within this cult of the superweapon. Oppenheimer wanted the whole world to have it so that no one would have an advantage. Teller, of course, was a nationalist, like most of the Dominionists today. Yes, we should have a one-world government, but it should be run by Americans. Well, Teller, of course, was also involved, it's alleged, with the Majestic 12 project, UFO research. Stan Deo says that he was working under the direction of Edward Teller when he was down at Pine Gap, Australia, working on anti-gravity technology. So I said, well, that's probably, I mentioned that during the interview with Paul and Phil, and said it's probably outside the scope of your article and your argument here. And they said, no, actually, this is going to be part of our forthcoming book. Like, oh. Because now we come back around to V and Independence Day. And
absolutely. Right. The coming announcement that Stan Deo has been talking about for several years now, that eventually that there will be a revelation from the world governments that they've been in contact with alien life forms for decades. And we're finally going to tell you now you're – because you know what? When Orson Welles – Orson Welles. When Orson Welles did – H.G. Wells' War of the Worlds, back on radio, back in the early 20th century, it was done in a way that intentionally, now, Wells claimed he didn't do it intentionally, but there is strong evidence, I believe, that it was done intentionally. Orson Welles was a genius when it came to staging, and staging for radio is even more difficult. But it was done in a way that made it sound like it was real. It was like you had just tuned in to your local radio station, and there were breaks for music, there were breaks for news. It was all done. If you missed the opening 30 seconds that said this is a fictionalized version for radio of H.G. Wells' War of the Worlds, you didn't know that it was not really something that was being reported. Mm-hmm. It would be like tuning in to Fox News or CNN and having them have live footage and breaking for commercials and then coming back and we're still here at the scene of this horrific, you know, event where aliens have come down. Imagine that. People listening to the radio and mm-hmm. believing that the United States had been invaded by Martians.
Yep, and it's not the first or last time, certainly not the last time, that such techniques were employed. And Paul and Phil went on to point out that a movie from 1983 called The Day After mm-hmm. was employed. Now, it didn't feature an attack from outer space, but it did deal with global destruction mm-hmm. through a nuclear exchange mm-hmm. between the U.S. and Russia. Starred Jason Robards, Steve Guttenberg, mm-hmm. and others.
It was filmed in Kansas when I was living in Nebraska.
And the scenes of Kansas, the heartland of the United States, just absolutely wasted by nuclear warheads was shocking. In fact,
sort of like the movie, the TV show Jericho.
Exactly. In fact, President Reagan was so moved by what he saw, by the images from that film, that he went and brokered a peace treaty or negotiated a peace deal with the Russians, was signed at Reykjavik. Of course, the Russians cheated. They deployed nuclear-tipped missiles in Eastern Europe and then didn't declare them as part of the deal. But the point was that, like Orson Welles before him, like the fiction of H.G. Wells, which inspired not only the atomic weapon, but also the means by which it was created in the Manhattan Project, where, you know, the scientists were all isolated in individual cells that didn't know what the other groups were doing. The Day After had a similar impact on culture and on reality mm-hmm. because it changed the a real nationalist, a patriot like Ronald Reagan, into somebody who believed that we needed to submit to some kind of global control for the good of all mankind. There was another movie from 1983, and that's one thing I was looking up here while we were talking, which really impacted me. I don't remember seeing The Day After in 1983, but also in 1983 was a movie that was made for television and delivered like a news report, similar to The War of the Worlds in 1939, called Special Bulletin. And maybe some listeners remember this film. It was delivered in the form of a series of special news reports on a fictional television network called RBS that broadcast reports of a terrorist who had brought an atomic bomb into Charleston Harbor in South Carolina.
Oh, that's really
interesting. On a tugboat. Yeah, 39th parallel.
Yeah, and there have been so many exercises.
39th or 33rd.
33rd. There have been so many drills
right
around Charleston.
Yeah, and it was it was really creepy. I really had a hard time getting Mom and Dad to agree to watch it because they just thought, well, this is too depressing. Let's watch Three's Company instead. But it was really scary, and the movie ends with the bomb being detonated.
Let's find out if that's available on Netflix.
It's a good one. Yeah, Special Bulletin. It really was a creepy film and well done for the time. It was before 24-hour cable news, and that was the sense that you got while you were, as I remember it now, that was the sense that I had, that you were watching a news network that was devoted to covering this story. Just a scary thing. And again, it's interesting that it came out in 1983, the same year as The Day After.
Mm-hmm. And just 1 year later, 1984, of course, the big year from the book, of course, that, well, the Mac came out that year. but we've talked many, many times about how entertainment, so-called entertainment, mm-hmm. Is actually there to brainwash us in many ways. It's there to prepare our minds and our spirits to accept whatever is coming. And H.G. Wells was just ahead of his time. The people weren't ready to hear that. They weren't ready to hear that Martians were landing. And we have had much preparation as far as mind control, mm-hmm. if you want to call it that, over the many decades since that original broadcast, probably 80 years or so. Mm-hmm. And now I think that there are a lot of new agers out there, at the very least, who, sort of like in the movie Mars Attacks, would sit up there
and go out and greet the spaceship mothership with open arms. Yeah.
Yes.
Well, you're probably right, because we have been conditioned to expect that something like this is going to happen, and to misinterpret the arrival of the visitors as something good.
Well, particularly but again, if we're portrayed in a messianic way.
Yeah, yeah. And there are a variety of messages and ways that these aliens are typically portrayed by Hollywood. You've got the conquering aliens of Independence Day. You've got the friendly aliens of Close Encounters of the Third Kind and E.T.
Well, we've got Fourth Kind coming out, and they don't look friendly at all.
No, in Fourth Kind, they don't look friendly
either.
Which
is based on true stories.
Yeah. Need to talk to Joe Jordan about that. There are a variety of ways that these are portrayed, but the ultimate end is the same. Humanity must unite either to join the Space Brotherhood or to fight the common threat. It's classic Hegelian dialectic. I mean, the end result is the same. You've got two different paths, but they wind up at the same destination, kind of like Republicans and Democrats. Now, you conservatives who want to argue with me about that, just remember that if President Bush or President Bush Sr. or President Reagan, any one of them had wanted to do away with abortion in the United States, they could have done it by issuing an executive order that defined the fetus as human from the moment of conception.
Mm-hmm. Yes, they could have.
Issue that to the Justice Department, and they could have done that at any time and have not. So, you know, let's not get too caught up here in that, you know, Republicans are still better because they're two heads of the same beast. So we've got, you know, that mind control, I don't know, mind control, but at least sort of the influence of the culture in which we're soaking. And how we respond to it, again, is key. And we need to, you know, refer back to Scripture. And something that you made mention of before the show, just bear in mind the, you know, when things all seem to be too weighty, when we start thinking about all of this and how pervasive the influence of the enemy is in the world which we live, to just...
Go read Philippians.
Go Philippians, and you mentioned Philippians chapter 4, of course, which is where Paul says, whatever is true, whatever is honorable, whatever is just, whatever is pure, whatever is lovely, whatever is commendable, if there is any excellence, if there is anything worthy of praise, think about these things.
Whole chapter, Philippians 4, it is so good. I can do all things.
Wasn't Philippians
Christ who strengthens me?
Wasn't that the letter that Paul wrote while he was in under house arrest in Rome, and just?
You know, I think it is.
Yeah. So, and again, remembering that Paul and Peter and the other apostles lived and wrote during the reigns of some of the most notorious of the Roman emperors, like Caligula and Nero.
Yeah.
I don't think we can say we've got it any worse than they did.
No.
I mean, we're still all behind enemy lines, but. I don't know that we've got it any worse than they did. Well, the hate crimes bill, signed as part of the military appropriations bill, you know, just devious, backhanded way. So we'll kind of have to watch and see how that plays out and when the first test cases begin to arrive at the courts. Because that will happen soon, I predict. I mean, Canada, they've got their human rights tribunals where, you know, you can be accused of hate speech by criticizing someone of another faith or another lifestyle choice.
Here's what I want to see, though. I want to see someone like Jay Sekulow come out and manage to use that law in a way that protects Christians. Because we're fair game. You can write any movie scene. You can say whatever you want to. You can spew venom at a Christian, but you can't do it to a Muslim.
No, you don't dare.
I mean, you don't. I mean, Christians really are. We're fair game, and I think it's because I know it's because the enemy hates us. Mm-hmm. The enemy hates Jews and Christians because we worship the right God.
Bingo. Cha.
We worship the enemy.
Yeah.
We're on his side.
It will be interesting to see if something like that comes to court. I mean, we be entertaining at the very least. I don't expect it to come of anything, but it will be interesting to see the tables turned. Now, here's an interesting point. Given the scriptural guidelines as far as using the courts to settle grievances. Now, that only pertains to Christian versus Christian non-Christian, doesn't it? If you've got a dispute with a brother, you don't take him to court.
No, you don't. Well, as far as I can remember, I think it is only Christian on Christian. But I don't think that really gives us license to go out and just, you know, be in court all the time. Okay, you're not are you a believer or not? Let me see. Are you wearing a cross?
Yeah. Well, sooner or later, there will be some test cases that come up on both sides, and we'll watch those with interest because it is now within the discretion of the justice system in the United States for prosecutors to begin building a case.
I should just put my microphone down there next to his nose because he's making the most extraordinary sounds.
That's doxy speak. He's not perturbed by this at all.
No, he's not.
The cat on the front porch doesn't even bother seeing
it. Honestly, we shouldn't be because Jesus told us long ago that they hated him.
Right.
He says, they hate me. Do you really think they're going to love you? Come on.
In fact, he took it a step further and said, woe unto you if the world speaks well of you.
Mm-hmm.
And yet, you're right. It's so easy for us, and here I am sitting and ranting about stuff, to
just
get
let
riled
it go,
up.
Honey.
Expect
well,
it.
So what if he signed it? I don't care.
Exactly. So
I think it's just rejoice. It's just another indicator that we really are just maybe days, weeks, you know, it could be moments away.
Amen to
from
that.
The return of Jesus Christ.
Well, interesting weekend, of course, you know, this past weekend being Halloween, and we sat and handed out candy. One of our brothers sent me a note, said he handed out about 600 tracts to kids who came to his door this weekend.
Amen.
Yeah, so good on you, brother. But there's a number of Christian churches this past weekend who filmed a movie, or screened a movie, rather, called Dangerous Calling, which is billed as a new Christian horror film.
Huh?
Don't know anything about it. Haven't seen it. All I'm seeing here is a still photo of the film, in which a handsome young man looks like he's about to be brained with a fireplace poker by a could be his mom. I don't know. But Dangerous Calling, according to the CEO of the company that produced it, said it is intended to be essentially, and I'm paraphrasing his quote now, an antidote to the occultish films that predominate our culture. You know, everything from the movies that depict the the supernatural in the wrong way to just, you know, flat-out torture porn like the Saw films.
Well, you know, wait and see what it's like. I'd like to see it before I comment on it. But
right.
You and I have said so many times, as we're watching a movie on sci-fi or we're watching a so-called horror film or whatever, if only they would, you know, stop and pray and ask Jesus Christ for his help. Okay, here's an example. Poltergeist. We were watching that the other day.
Right.
One of my favorite movies. But they get their worldview is so wrong in that movie. If only that rather than getting in Tangina from the Wizard of Oz to come in and help them out and clean the house, instead, if they would literally call in the church and have members of the body of Christ come in and pray, because this the fact that there are spiritual entities,
right?
That's all true.
Yeah.
That's all true. That part of the movie is absolutely real, but they should be battling it with the appropriate armor.
Prayer and fasting.
Ephesians 6:12.
Exactly right. It's like, you know, Marx and Engels on capitalism. Yeah, they got the problems right, but their solution was just totally messed up. It was ate up. Tangina.
This house is clean.
I love that actress.
Yeah.
I really do. She's really funny.
Yeah. But again, another bad message. And Steven Spielberg, who directed that film, kind of unofficially directed it, but he wrote it and came up with his plot. He has produced a long body of work that really delves into the supernatural and presents it in just a wrong way. Mm-hmm. We could do an entire show just analyzing the works of Steven Spielberg and how...
Well, E.T., you mentioned that a few minutes
E.T.
ago, and how those little critters look so much like the eye idols.
Yeah, Raiders of the Lost Ark. Oh, you know, it's the Ark of the Covenant being a radio to God. No, not exactly, not quite, not at all. and the what was the one with Sean Connery, where they found the...
Oh, the cup from the Last Crusade. Yeah,
right, the Holy Grail. You know, again, and then of course the Kingdom of the Skull, Kingdom of the Crystal Skull, with the whole, you know.
Oh, don't even get me started on that movie. I just think that movie it was sort of fun, but I'm so glad we didn't waste our money in this.
No, absolutely not. And of course the miniseries he produced for Sci-Fi called Taken. Yeah. Just a whole litany of films that Spielberg has produced that have impacted the culture in a major way.
Mm-hmm.
I'd say everything he's done since Jaws has really impacted the culture in the same way that the predictive programming, if you will, or normative fiction, to use a phrase from Paul and Phil Collins, of H.G. Wells has shaped the thinking of the American public and the world at large about the supernatural, the way Dan Brown has done with the Da Vinci Code and Angels and Demons, and you know, the new one now that the Lost Symbol, kind of what we're trying to do with the Laodicea Chronicles from
a
Christian standpoint.
That's why we choose fiction, because you really can shape, you know, a person's thought processes. You can present an idea so much more compellingly in a fictional format than you can in nonfiction.
Right, right. If you wrote The War of the Worlds as a dry academic tome, an essay, most people wouldn't bother to read it, and those who did would probably laugh out loud. Aliens from outer space! Ah! But if you present it in the form of fiction, or if you can present it as a visual work like Independence Day.
Movies, yes, absolutely.
Because the visual component is even more compelling, and maybe we should be writing movie scripts. The impact of a film like that, or The Day After, which was directed by Nicholas Meyer, by the way, the guy who wrote that Sherlock Holmes pastiche.
The 7% solution, I know.
Really had an impact on culture. So I didn't mean to go down the rabbit trail, but it just occurred to me that almost everything Spielberg has done has had not so much a science fiction aspect to it, but a supernatural
aspect. Have you ever noticed that our house is surrounded by rabbit trails?
Yeah.
That's what Sam told me.
Well, mole trails, actually. And those are even tougher to get into and get out of again once you're in. So anyway, it'll be interesting to see whether this Christian horror film Dangerous Calling will have an impact, or maybe start a trend. Because when you look at the Bible, I mean, you've got all the elements of a good horror film right there.
There's so much truth in there, and it's all about this supernatural battle that's going on. It's the thing you and I talk about all the time.
Right.
But sadly, I think kids are really, young women particularly, are really drawn to this vampire sort of storyline that's going on. It's very sexy. It's very, you know, let's face it, when you're 14, nobody understands you.
Yeah.
You know, that's how you're convinced. Nobody understands me. Nobody has ever felt the way I feel right now.
Mm-hmm.
Well, the fact is that your parents were 14 once, and they felt that very same way.
Oh,
they
that was
felt
in another...
isolated. Nope, it doesn't matter. It could have been 500 years before.
Yeah.
Everybody feels isolated 13, 14, 15 years old. It's an awkward stage.
The way it is, yeah.
You're going from a concrete view of the world to a very abstract view of the world, and you are totally adrift. And I think all too often these vampire things that are going on, like Twilight and New Moon and all of that, they're taking total advantage of that, because they're drawing in girls left and right.
Yeah.
And the guys love the torture porn.
Right, yeah.
Because that's all those movies are.
Saw,
movies like
Hostel.
Saw. Yeah, they're just torture porn.
Right. It is unbelievable. Just unbelievable. I mean, I literally can't sit through those films. I don't find
neither can I.
Suspense is one thing. I mean, a good Hitchcock thriller will hold my attention, you know, from start to finish.
Yeah.
And he can do it without getting gruesome. He did it without being gruesome. But
yeah, boy, the original Saw, you and I watched.
Mm-hmm.
There were parts of it that, frankly, I didn't think needed to be in there.
Right.
You didn't need to have this torturous, you know, you didn't need to see that.
Mm-hmm.
But the puzzle that he, you know, the
jigsaw.
Yeah, exactly,
killer, right.
Exactly. And this puzzle that you had to solve to figure out who was, you know, who was behind it all. Where was he? How was he figuring out? You know, who was it? The doctor? Was he involved? That was what drew me in as a viewer. But I think, sadly, it's not that.
No. The films since then have been about how Jigsaw justifies torturing people for their sins, and you know that.
No.
Yeah, is just over the top and just. And we talked about this before. There seems to be something to the shedding of blood in films, and just wondering whether the shedding of blood in films has any of the same supernatural, spiritual connotation that the literal shedding of real blood does.
We have wondered that so many times, because if you actually break down film into its actual components, it's just light and shadow. It is electronic in nature. It is part of the principality of the air.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, the prince and the power of the air is the enemy. And to be able to use this and the Internet as well to battle the Lord God Almighty, that's taken place all over the place, which is one of the reasons, speaking of the Internet, one of the reasons that I like to post scripture on my Facebook site. It's one of the reasons I do it, because I figure it's just one more slap at the enemy who's using it, who created it for his own uses.
That's right.
But the Lord can use even that invention, because he permitted it. You know, he can use it to win many, many people to Christ.
Yeah. Well, other odd things taking place in the here and now. This is a story that was sent to us by a listener several weeks back, and we apologize for not mentioning it sooner. Cattle mutilations, long a part of the lore of ufology, taking place in western Georgia near Gainesville. Twice, and this story now is from the second week of October, twice since late September, cattle on the Cooper Farm near Gainesville, Georgia, have turned up dead with parts of their body removed with surgical precision. They've got more than 200 head of cattle, so occasionally cattle die of natural causes. But the first cow found dead on the Cooper Farm had its milk sac cut out in a circle. And then 2 weeks later, a 7-month-old bull calf died, and its genitalia had been removed. So, not the first or last report of cattle mutilation. What it means, don't know.
Well,
a lot of theories and speculation.
Coyotes don't carry lasers with them.
No, they don't. Now, there's a theory that was proposed out there by a researcher that this actually had something to do with the spread of mad cow. In other words, the government trying to track the spread of mad cow. Now, I've not.
By excising the udder of a cow?
I don't know. I mean, for all we know, this could be a copycat, but there again, it's something that has been associated with the ufology, with UFO phenomenon, almost since the beginning. So it is still with us, and this was reported in a mainstream publication, the Gainesville Times in Georgia. So it's not I know a guy who knew a guy whose cousin told me that this was in the paper in October 9th, 2009, Gainesville Times.
How very strange. Well, there's a story that has nothing to do with any of that. That was out of, is out today, actually. It's talking about how Russia and Belarus have joined together to stage a nuclear exercise in Poland.
Really?
They're claiming that the scenario is that Poland tries to nuke Belarus.
Poland's got the bomb, huh?
Well, that's the exercise. And that Russia and Belarus are doing nothing but responding by invading Poland. That's the exercise.
I see.
And there was a quote in the article that I read that said that this all occurred. Now, supposedly, this didn't occur over the weekend. It occurred in September. But supposedly this all occurred on the 70th anniversary of the original Soviet invasion.
That's right.
Of Poland.
Yep. Needless to say, Poles are not amused.
No.
They are demanding a firm response from their government to the Russians.
The reason we as Americans need to pay attention to this is because there was a story in, I think, October 19th is about the time that this came out. The United States announced that Barack Obama intended, even though he was pulling the missile shield out, that he intended to send Patriot missiles to Poland.
So anti-missile missiles, but not...
Yes, which is what the missile shield was supposed to be in the first place. It was supposed to be an anti... It was all supposed to be defense.
Right, right.
And Obama agreed that in his meeting with Putin, not Medvedev, but with Putin, that he would pull, not deploy that the shield as it had been planned. And yet, and then it would go to a ship-based program that we could take it wherever we need it at the last minute. I know. But
from the time
the
missile launches to the time the ship gets, yeah.
But he agreed to go ahead and send the Patriots to Poland. So what the heck is going on?
Well, that's a good question. And again, Poles are not amused. One commentator in Poland has said that it's time now for Poles to either be counted as patriots or traitors. I mean, that's fighting words. Them's fighting words.
I don't mess with the Polish. I mean, they are scrappy.
Yeah.
In fact, when Poland was one of the few countries that actually went with the United States to Iraq, you and I were saying, okay, you know, they may laugh and say, oh, Poland's sending, you know, 5,000 guys or whatever it was. Look.
Yeah.
They're tough.
Well, they are. And, you know, a lot of the European nations, they've been fighting for, you know, thousands of years, various back to, you know, when it was the Romans versus the tribes. So, you know, they're pretty good at it. And I was surprised at just doing some light reading on history of the 16th, 17th, 18th centuries in Europe, how many countries were fighting with each other at any given time. They were constantly fighting. No wonder so many of them wanted to get away to America. It was a lousy place to be. I had ancestors that moved from Switzerland to Germany to what is now today Moldova. I mean, talk about desperation. In order to get away from
somewhere, there's a listener in Moldova going, hey.
No disrespect intended. Moldova is just, it is probably the poorest. It is the poorest of all the European nations. And at the time, it was part of Russia. You know, Catherine the Great said to the Germans, come on, all are welcome. Yeah, that lasted for about 75 years. But it's no wonder. They were constantly fighting the Austrians and the French. It just, so, you know.
Hey, speaking of Austria.
Pretty warlike. Yeah.
The story that came out of Vienna, Austria. Oh, gosh, I think it took place a few weeks ago. But there's a new twist to it. The UN scientist who fell down at, what, 123-story stairwell?
No, well, 17th floor.
Okay, 17th, sorry. Don't know why. Well, hyperbole, well.
Yeah, I've told you a million times.
Stop using hyperbole.
The net result was the same. I mean, 1,723 floors, you're still just as dead. British nuclear expert named Timothy Hampton was monitoring nuclear activity his forte.
In Iran is one of the areas that he was looking at. Apparently what he did and his team members did, if I remember correctly, is that they would take a look at seismographs from the area and determine whether or not they were naturally or unnaturally occurring. Earthquake or nuclear test.
Well, this took place in Austria, as you mentioned, in Vienna, and he fell from the 17th floor of a United Nations building there.
Well, Iran has had a couple of pretty nasty earthquakes, and one of them took place very close to the Qom
facility,
the new facility. Mm. Yeah, Qom, is that Qom?
Qom, yeah.
Mm. So I don't know. Maybe he had discovered something that wasn't really an earthquake that had been called an earthquake.
Right.
Maybe he learned something he wasn't supposed to know, but what was originally called a suicide is now being called homicide.
Yeah, yeah. He was a scientist for the Comprehensive Nuclear Test Ban Treaty Organization at the UN building in Vienna, and as Sharon said, their job was to look for anomalous tremors in order to detect unauthorized nuclear tests. So the suggestion is that Hampton was, in fact, discussing something that might have involved nuclear testing in Iran. Now, the police in Austria at first said that he had committed suicide, but friends and family don't believe it. And now they did a second autopsy and have determined, no, that it is that they found evidence that Mr. Hampton did not die by his own hands. So or by his own hands, I should say.
I think that they're saying that he may have been dead before the fall.
Yeah. Coroner says that one possible theory is that Hampton was carried up to the 17th floor and then pushed to make it appear as though he committed suicide. Mm-hmm. Found some trauma to his neck, but apparently not enough to be identified as a cause of death.
Right. So, I don't think the tox results are back yet.
No, that'll take a couple more weeks yet, according to this story. But bottom line, nuclear, detective, basically, mm-hmm. watching for illegal nuclear testing around the world. Dead after falling from the 17th floor of a UN building.
I found interesting about this article is at the very end of the article, it said, well, this isn't the first time this has happened. There was a British woman or whatever who, 4 months earlier had supposedly committed suicide by jumping down the stairwell.
Yeah, yeah.
So, and I tried to find what that article was, and I couldn't find it. However, there was another story from, I think, 2005 about a UN employee that fell down the well.
Yeah. Well, interesting that,
it must be time to go. Sam just got up.
Yeah, and I look at the clock, and we're right at 59 minutes. Time got away from me there, but Sam's internal clock is right on the money.
He always gets up after about an hour. He's the most amazing dog.
Well, he's right on the money.
We had quite a number of Skype calls over the last few days, and one of them we opened the show with.
Yes.
And if you were wondering who sang that rousing chorus to me.
Yes.
Because my birthday was on October 28th, and many people said hi to me on Facebook, and that was really wonderful. Thank you very much. Thank you, Dean, from the UK, our fan from over there. Well, it was quite
one of my old countrymen. I am part Welsh,
You are?
Yes, I am. The 15th noble tribe of North Wales. That's true. That is true.
I know.
Yep.
Well, that was that. And also, we also want to mention a couple of messages from Johnny from the Iron Show. And you want to go to ironshow.com. You make sure you go there because Johnny has an interview with Peter Goodgame that will blow your mind. That's what he assures us. It will blow our minds. We haven't had a chance to listen to it yet, but apparently it's a 4-hour interview that is being posted in parts. And you want to make sure you get over there and download it. ironshow.com. Thanks, Johnny, for letting us know about that.
We appreciate that. Definitely going to listen to that and check that out. And
one more message that we want to play from Jason, who's a youth pastor in Western Pennsylvania.
Hi, Derek and Sharon. It is Jason from Western Pennsylvania. I was just calling to say thank you for what you guys are doing. I have been listening, it seems forever, ever since I discovered podcasting, which was years and years ago, it seems. But I know it was pretty much from the very beginning I picked you guys up. And have been listening with rapt attention with my tinfoil fat hat firmly on my head during these years. And I enjoy your insight and maybe your tongue-in-cheekness at times. But also it's a blessing for me as a youth pastor to get a different view on things and to look at Scripture maybe a little differently than I would normally and how I teach. And also as outside of youth ministry and sales and all the countless hours that I spend in a car and traveling about Western Pennsylvania and Eastern Ohio, I appreciate the time that I get to spend with you guys throughout the year. So thanks. Keep doing what you're doing, and I will definitely keep listening.
Well, thank you for your kind words, Jason. We appreciate that. It's nice to know that you see fit to have us keep you company while you're in those long stretches between sales calls.
Poor lonely man.
But and we thank you too for your kind words about perhaps seeing Scripture in a new way. And we just pray that God grants us wisdom. And please remember, as we always say, don't take our word as gospel. Take the gospel as gospel.
Amen.
Yeah.
Get in there and dig.
But thank you again, Jason. We sure appreciate that. If you'd like to leave us a message, you can do so a couple of ways. Of course, the phone call, if you direct it to country code 1-317-489-9350, it rings through to a 24/7 voicemail, and you can leave a message for us, which we may use in a future PID radio. Of course, you can also send us email to radio@peeringintodarkness.com.
That's right. And you can join us at Facebook and all sorts of spacey pages and places. Yeah. We're at twitter.com. Sam T. Doxson has a fan page. You want to make sure that you go there and see the Sam O'Lantern outfit that he wore and see all the area cats. Also, for those of you who are helping out through donations, we are so appreciative of everything. I know we just recently got a check. Please forgive me. I don't have that in front of me. We're upstairs in the office. I could run downstairs and get the note. I promise in next weekend's show, I will mention you by name. I just want to say thank you. You, everybody who sends us, you know, the tiniest amount, we so appreciate it. It's not the amount. It's the fact that you think of us at all.
It is very humbling.
That's what amazes me.
Yeah.
And many of you are going above and beyond. But so thank you very much for that. And I promise that we will get that so I can thank you by name next week. And if ever any of you has helped out through the donation at PayPal, or if you've sent us a check and we've not thanked you on the show, and we try to just use first names because we try to keep your privacy, keep your privacy private. If we've neglected to thank you, please let us know, because we don't want to do that. You've not neglected us, and the very least we can do is thank you.
Amen to that. Check the show notes at PIDradio.com. Put links to the articles and news stories that we talked about today. Coming up next weekend on View from the Bunker, our old friend Patty Heron.
Oh, how wonderful.
Yeah, Patrick Heron has a new ebook out, Prophetic Analysis, so you want to hear that. And until then, I'm Derek Gilbert.
I'm Sharon Gilbert. Bye-bye, everybody.
Gonna step up to the microphone, say it loud and clear. A better day is coming soon to get us out of here. Don't let the hard times get you down. All the days will disappear. There's a new day coming. A new day coming.
analysis on demand.
This is PID Radio.